A pedestrian walking across I-5. You know what? That is the very scent of the worst of Seattle spirit.
We have a lot of data, the way we get data and analyze data. What we do know from looking at the data is, the data is very clear.
Well, here's a little bit of data for you. First of all, welcome Michael Medved to the program. Michael, thank you for coming in.
Todd, it's always great.
This morning, there was a 7-mile backup. More disturbingly, a so-called pedestrian lost their life walking across I-5. Michael, this is Trooper Rick Johnson talking with Q13. About the incident.
Why this man was running across the highway, we have no idea, but surprisingly, state troopers say it happens more often than you might think.
You talk to the troopers that work this area. I mean, there's pedestrians that run across the freeway, you know, not all the time, but frequent enough to where, you know, they contact and say, listen, this isn't the safe thing to do. We've had individuals on bikes try to get across the freeway, that kind of thing.
There's no mystery as to why people are walking across I-5 and where it meets I-90. There's no mystery at all. Everybody knows this. I think that's the trooper's way of saying, we know that this is probably a homeless person who did this.
Without any question, they have their whole homeless village right there. It's so funny that this story came up because the other night, and it was last week, Diane and I were coming. We'd gone out to West Seattle to look at the sunset, stuff like that. And we're driving back at around 9 p.m., and we're just coming up the I-5, and on that on-ramp, you know, that connects the I-5 to the I-90 East.
Yeah.
And it's pretty narrow there, and there's a whole bunch of tents and shacks and garbage right there. There were three people who went, I mean, right in front of us. If I had been going at anywhere, I was going at about 40 miles an hour coming into the turn.
Yeah.
And it was a close-run thing. And it was like three people, and it's two men and a woman, and they crossed over right ahead of me, and I of course slowed up, and then they continued walking downhill on the on ramp toward the oncoming traffic on the side of the road, but right there,
yeah.
And this is completely crazy, and the terrible thing is not only could they get very severely hurt. But if you bang into a person on a narrow on-ramp like that, what's going to happen to you and your car and...
Well, and your soul. This
right.
Morning, there's a dump truck driver going about feeding his family or her family. I'm assuming it's a man. Driving about in the dump truck. And that person now has to deal with the fact that through no fault of their own, it seems, they took a human life.
No, and it's just so unnecessary why they do not clean up these roadside encampments, and I know why they put them there at the roadside. They want people to see.
Right.
They want to make a statement.
Right.
We're here and we're proud and we're homeless and you got to do something about us. And for God's sake, in any civilized society, you clear up off these people from the roadways. It's a question of safety. It's a question of decency.
Compassion for the people.
But more, we have a great many jobs and a great many businesses that are very dependent in this town in summer tourism.
Well, and they are. And we had the incident, and I reported this yesterday. We got the police report minutes after it was released. Our newsroom got it, and I'd given them this tip about this. They gave it to me. A tourist family going on a cruise here for one night, Michael, on a cruise ship. They decide to take in Seattle. So, of course, they go down to the city center and they're walking around the 4th and 5th and Blanchard area and they're attacked. A woman asks them for money. They gave her a couple bucks. She wasn't satisfied. She reached in, grabbed their wallet. Eventually, a chase ensued. Witnesses everywhere. One of the people who chased this woman down was bitten. Some skin was broken, and the tourists who were assaulted were absolutely distraught. And of course, the police came out. This woman, or this homeless woman, apparently quite a fighter, quite a fighter. And oddly, Michael had a red flag for mental health. Oddly, had a flag that she was also likely to assault officers.
And that, I think it was Federal Way. There was this battle between an officer and a mentally ill woman. Yeah. Who was trying to kill herself, and the officer was trying to take the gun. She was reaching for his gun to kill herself.
Yes.
And she, like, elbowed him in the head and fought with him while she had his gun in her hand.
And I cannot for the life of me understand this, that we'll play this quote, and it's exactly the one that we should play. It's the so-called King County prosecutor, Dan Satterberg.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
But in reality, Michael, this is not Dan Satterberg's fault. He's doing what he needs to do. He's running to the left. He's running to the left of the left so he can be continue to be a leftist in charge of a leftist King County.
He left the Republican Party, right?
Well,
he's
yeah,
now
but
officially a Democrat.
Officially a leftist Democrat, but, right. Which he's been for years. What I fail to understand is the I call them ethnic liberals. Now, I don't mean a race, ethnically
right.
Race. I mean, let me say it this way, genetically liberal. They're born liberal. They never question that. They never question this identity. And they don't look at their city. I have also dodged a homeless person on I-5 coming out of this radio station headed south on I-5. It's before I even got to the curve, before I even got to I-90. The man was leaning against the barrier on the left lane, and he was just getting ready to jump off. And he started to go in front of me, and I slowed down. I would have hit him if I didn't really slow down hard. I looked behind me. Three cars later, he was into the carpool lane, and he was standing in the carpool lane, and he was playing Frogger to get across the freeway at 6:15 p.m. on, I don't remember, I think it was a Friday. Now, in this, maybe this is related, maybe it's not. There's a service called Wallet Hub, site called Wallet Hub. Seattle is the fifth worst in the nation when it comes to driving around town. And they don't have a category, though, for likely to hit a street person.
Yeah, you know, there's a piece in USA Today today. I don't know if you saw it, but it's one of these big statistical pile-up pieces.
Yeah.
We have had an explosion, an epidemic of traffic fatalities involving pedestrians.
Pedestrians
yes. being hit. It's up 46% in the last, I think, 3 years. And
bicycles as well. Bicycles as well.
Yeah, but without any question, that has to relate to the homeless epidemic all around the country.
There's no doubt. And then we have this. Speaking of Dan Satterberg, speaking of Michael Bryan.
City, we have no plan.
King County Metro on a bus, a 36-year-old, and this is from Seattle, or no, it's Amy Clancy, Cairo. Amy's great. A guy named Samuel Eugene Lawrence was arrested at for a $100,000 warrant. He was on a bus, Michael. There was apparently an intoxicated female. He sexually assaulted her on the bus. She was she's on surveillance camera saying, I really need help here. I'm bleeding everywhere. The driver had noticed a commotion.
Was she bleeding before the assault or after?
I think after the assault. This man, this so-called vagrant, after assaulting her, pulled the cord to stop the bus, grabbed the woman, threw her off the bus, and was treating her like property, and a couple of passengers intervened. That happened at 4:20 in the morning. He was arrested at 6:16 in the morning. He was released. The detective in the case, Ryan Abbott, did not know that this assailant had been released until he saw him on the street on the Pacific Highway. He was taken back into custody. Michael, this Samuel Eugene Lawrence has 50 previous arrests.
And he's described as a vagrant?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
50 previous arrests.
You know, here's a question. Whatever happened to three strikes, you're out?
It was whittled away by the same people who whittle away any citizens initiative. Whittled away. 50 assaults, but I want you to rest assured on something because I don't want you to leave this segment sad or concerned about your community. The authorities have cracked down. They have told this assailant with 50 previous arrests that he is no longer allowed to ride Metro buses unless he has an adult chaperone.
Yeah, but he's allowed to camp by the freeway and he's allowed to...
Yeah, he's out again.
Of course.
But rest assured, he'll never get on another bus.
See, the point is, it's one of those things, everybody thought three strikes, you're out was a great idea, and it passed overwhelmingly,
yes.
And it deserved to pass overwhelmingly, and we need it enforced. You want to take care of the homeless problem? If three strikes and you're out includes things like drunk and disorderly, or resisting arrest,
yep.
or anything, it seriously, it really does need to stop. And you talk about the homeless crisis in Portland. We did this on the air. 52% of all the arrests in Portland are involving homeless people.
Yes. And by the way, if we start that program up again, Michael, the three strikes are out, you won't have to do much of it because these people will move on. We'll move on. We'll come back into the national scene with Michael Medved on the Todd Herman Show. The first guitar piece in rock and roll that anybody who buys a guitar ever learns to play, courtesy of producer Tom. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Well, you know that Trump, he's just blowing it with the Hispanic voters. Right? Right?
The Todd Herman Show is live and local because the power seekers never rest. And political news is breaking as we speak.
Right? Isn't that the, is that what we understand? When Michael and I were talking during the break, he's handed me a wonderful piece of paper, very interesting, on who approves of the president, but specifically approves of the president because of something they believe about themselves. It's an Emerson College y Palazzo poll. And some Zogby analytics added for good measure. So how do Hispanics feel that they're faring under this president? It's 62% of Hispanics feel they are better off under President Donald J. Trump.
And what's stunning to me is it's more positive for Hispanics than for white people. I mean, people, the whole thing about President Trump is, oh, he's only for white people and he wants all the people of color to rot and he wants to destroy them. Now, it's true. Black people disproportionately think they are worse off under President Trump, though the statistics say quite the opposite. Lowest black unemployment rate ever. Among Latinos, 62% more than among white people, it's 56%. But among Hispanic people, 62% say they're better off since 2016. They're better off today.
Well, I read this poll last week, Michael, about the specific areas of the president's job duties. So his approval rating, and it was the same last week, as I see in this poll you're quoting here, about 43%. It's decent. It's not great, and we'd like it to be higher.
It's very comparable to where Obama was at this point in his presidency. And remember, Obama won re-election.
Right, right. Oh, wait, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
The specifics, though. He is underwater in terms of immigration policy as a total, or no, job performance as a total, but when you get to the specifics.
Yeah.
The American people want stronger enforcement at the border. They identify the problem with people bringing their kids in as the people who originated that was the parents. They do not want the kids separated. They want the people reunited.
Right.
They
would like to see.
Yes, he is. They'd like to see some reform, but they want a very clear communication that you no longer get to come to the country illegally.
Do you know, what I think it is, frankly? And you're right about that, wanting that clear communication. The one aspect of the Trump program on immigration, and there's only one, that tests really, really badly and overwhelming opposition, is the $25 billion for the wall. I mean, the obsession with the wall is not good politics because, you know what? Anybody who likes the wall, they'll vote for Trump anyway. That's fine.
Okay, so then what we need, if that's a fact, I don't doubt your numbers. I just question how you secure a border without a physical barrier.
Oh no, a physical barrier is fine, but not
don't
everywhere.
Call it a wall.
Don't call it a wall.
call it a series of doors.
Because again, when he says it's going to be impenetrable, yeah. He's used that term. That what they need is, look, we live in the 21st century. The idea of building a prehistoric answer, which is a great big wall. It doesn't work. What we really need, and you and I both know, we need E-Verify.
We need
to make it impossible for people who are here without authorization to work.
Right. Impossible. And also, because we know that our border has been used, and I'm just about to get Michael into this next segment. There was a reporter, Josh Meyer with Politico, who broke a huge, incredible, incredibly detailed story about Hezbollah shipping cocaine in the United States with the kind assistance of narco-terrorists and human traffickers from Mexico who know the routes and know how to do this. It was a detailed report. Executives from DHS, FBI, Homeland Security, DOJ, named executives described this Project Cassandra. They were ready to indict. President Obama made the decision to shut that down to save the so-called deal with Iran. That reporter's back with a story about the president.
What did it have to do with the deal with Iran?
Because Hezbollah was involved.
Oh, I see.
Right? Because Hezbollah, right, one of Iran's partners, was involved in this, earning money.
It's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
So there you go. That's why they allowed the drug trafficking to continue. Now that same reporter is out with another well-detailed story of President Obama making a decision to allow the Taliban to continue to traffic opioids into this country. So I would like to see a series of drones on the border. I'd like to see more enforcement on
Absolutely.
The borders stopping that. Let me ask you a question.
And it'll be a lot more cost effective than a wall.
Yeah, it'd be more cost effective and gives a chance to really employ some of this incredible technology we have.
Yeah, and the problem with the wall is that you have property owners who are suing and don't want it on their property, and conservatives don't like eminent domain.
So let's bring about the biggest, best digital wall combination of human assets, digital in the sky. We can do this.
Oh, absolutely. Look, if you go look at the security barrier in Israel, and I've toured almost the whole thing, 93%, only 3% of the security barrier is an actual wall.
You want another example?
Of course,
example?
That's what they feature in the press.
You want another example? Drive by Bill Gates' house.
No walls.
You go by Gates' house and take a look. Now, there is a wall as you approach his home to go in to the driveway. And I know that because when it was being built, I got to go take a look at when it was being built. But you look at it on the lake. As you're driving across the 520, glance to your right, and the Gates compound. He has an open offer to buy his neighbor's home so as to not bother them, etc. He's a really good neighbor, I understand. So you drive by, you glance over. No, he is. Glance over to the right. His home is there, and there's no wall, but it is incredibly secure. We got to run because we are just, you know what we're loaded with, Michael? Revenue. You know what we're doing really well at the station? We got advertisers coming on supporting this radio show and Jason's show. We're blessed with what we say in the business, inventory. Right? We have an oversold inventory. Isn't that a blessing?
It is a great blessing, and thank you to the advertisers.
No kidding.
Keep it going.
And thank you, folks, for supporting them. Michael Medved, michaelmedved.com contains all the goodies. I'll get to this report. The President Obama, Barack Obama, made the decision to continue to allow the Taliban to continue to ship opioids into our country. According to the Politico, a right wing, as you know, bitter, clinging right wing organization. Right, Michael?
Not so much.
Yeah. I think you can make an objective case that Barack Obama performed more significant acts of corruption than any president in history. More significant. And we could go through some of the lists, but I think you know the lists as well as I do, but I don't think you know this one because it just broke. You know about, because this program, and because you are well-read and well-studied, you know about the Cassandra Project. This is easily one of the biggest acts of corruption and malfeasance and most profound ever perpetrated in the history of the United States of America from the presidential level. It makes, I can't think of something grander in scale. The Cassandra Project was the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, the FBI working to track in detail Hezbollah operatives in partnership with narco-terrorists from Mexico who were using tunnels and trucks and other means to bring cocaine into the United States of America to fund Hezbollah. Now, certainly Hezbollah would never track those methods and learn them and use them, say, to bring in weapons or munitions or dirty bombs or anything like that. Why would they ever do that? The DOJ, this is according to named executives and investigators who spoke with Josh Meyer at the Politico, who deserves two consecutive Pulitzer Prizes. Named executives described the Cassandra project, or Project Cassandra, described that they were ready to indict, and stated to Meyer in this article that it was the White House who shut it down. You might say obstructed justice on behalf of a friend. Obama spent a good portion of his time in the White House trying to raise Iran up to be the leader of the Middle East. Why? I don't know. If you know, let me know. The text line's open, 800-465-8770. But I said, if you know, I'm aware of Valerie Jarrett. I get that. I understand. But I'm saying, I don't know why. That's part one. Part two is brought to my attention by the great Professor William Jacobson at legalinsurrection.com. Another operation. This one involving the Taliban, called Project Reciprocity. This was a design to capture and bring to justice Taliban members who were in Afghanistan shipping opioids into the United States. A veteran team of U.S. officials in Kabul had gone to Obama with a plan, a detailed plan, a couple hundred page plan on how to shut down this network of drug lords who were succeeding in getting cocaine into our, opioids into our country. The plan was approved. They wanted to prosecute these Taliban commanders criminally, bring them to the United States, use it to crack the network. Obama, according to Josh Meyer at the Politico, shut it down. He allowed the Taliban to continue to ship drugs into our country. Now, we'll get to the article. And Josh Meyer, by the way, Josh Meyer has yet to be on MSNBC, ABC, CBS, or NBC, or NPR, or covered in the New York Times for the initial report, that one about Hezbollah, has yet to have mainstream media exposure. In fact, when he has had mainstream media exposure, it's been because people like Ben Rhodes, the campaign volunteer for Barack Obama, who suddenly became a speechwriter for Barack Obama, all of a sudden the national security advisor for Barack Obama, whose brother is a news executive. I forget what network, because who doesn't forget in that incestuous stew of the swamp? Suddenly he's a national security advisor. He's the guy who in all likelihood created the Benghazi lie. He is the guy, because he bragged about it, who invented the fiction of the Iranian moderates, the echo chamber. He has attacked Meyer in social media. That gets on the press, but not Meyer's original piece. So Josh Meyer explained some of this on Twitter. And by the way, again, this is Legal Instruction brought my attention to this. He talked about his source for this, Meyer's source. This is about the Taliban continuing to ship opioids into our country in the midst of an opioid crisis. Which, by the way, makes the supply cheaper. Meaning more people can buy it. Makes it more profitable because more drug cartels can move it. This is the writer of this piece on Twitter. My source told me it was even more damaging to U.S. national security and global security interest. He said an Obama administration official shut down the investigation, codenamed Operation Reciprocity, partly because it wanted to negotiate a peace deal with the Taliban. So they wanted to negotiate peace, so they said, continue to ship opioids into our country. His source said he believed it was another example of the Obama White House putting politics ahead of U.S. national security interests. Do you think? He writes, after the U.S. invaded Afghanistan post 9/11 to rout al-Qaeda and the Taliban that had harbored it, both groups went underground. Taliban senior leaders had long been involved in the heroin trade. They slowly decided to take more profits. How much profit? According to Myers, they took in $300 million per year. And they used that to buy weapons and explosives to kill 2,000 American troops, civilians, and to push Afghanistan to the point, this according to Meyer at the Politico, to becoming a narco state. Now, here's what's going on. Some of the people who started this project, Project Reciprocity, are begging President Trump to pick up the pieces and to go back at the same drug lords are still doing this, still bringing it into this country eventually. I don't think the Taliban directly brings it here. They hire, I'm not supposed to say MS-13. That's right, I forgot, because that's racist if you say MS-13 or other Honduran drug gangs or Colombian drug gangs or the Russian mob that operates here as well, or the Chinese, as we knew. The Chinese is investing here in pot houses and grow houses to grow pot and produce other drugs and ship it across the country because they know Washington State's a sucker place to do this because of Sleepy Jay Inslee and Sideshow Bob Ferguson and Smack Daddy Dow Constantine and Heroin Dan Satterberg. They let it all go on because you can walk around with a drug dealer's amount of drugs on you and not get popped. But I don't want to say MS-13 because then that's racist. So the people who were involved in this have now gone to the President Trump and said, hey, can you bring this back? There's a guy named Michael Marsak. He was the main architect of this plan for the DEA. He said, quote, this was the most effective and sustainable tool we had for disrupting and dismantling Afghan drug trafficking operations and separating from the Taliban, but it lies dormant, buried in obscure file rooms, all but forgotten. He's not the only one. A senior Afghan security official, M. Ashraf Hardari, is angry about this. He said it brought us almost to the breaking point, put our elections into a time of crisis, and then our economy almost collapsed. If that operation had continued, we wouldn't have the massive increase in production and cultivation of opioids that we do now. It, in fact, led, according to him, he said that this effort included an effort to indict Taliban narcotics kingpins who had stopped dead in its tracks. It cost this guy 16 months of his life working undercover in his own country at threat of death. The plan, by the way, was modeled after what we did to get the FARC guerrillas from Colombia into the country and try them. Does my memory fail me? Was it FARC guerrillas that Clinton pardoned? Is my memory wrong on that? You take just these two events, forget Benghazi. Well, don't forget it, but you take Benghazi, just pretend that didn't happen. Pretend the IRS targeting scandal didn't happen. Pretend the 136 times he lied about if you like your health care plan, you keep your health care plan. Forget that. Forget the targeting of the Tea Party groups. Forget that. Forget the DOJ and Project Choke Point, which was putting legal gun manufacturers out of business. Forget all that. These two factually, objectively true incidents indicate the most corrupt on a grand scale president we've ever seen. Text line 6341. If you couple those two incidents of allowing drugs to enter this country with Project Fast and Furious under Holder, you have three incidents that all have a common theme of cartels and trafficking on the border. I've heard it said that this is a trend. Well, there are three instances here, and it makes a trend of that behavior from Obama. Powerful statement. That's actually very, very powerful, and that's hard to dissuade. We'll come back or deny. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and jump into just a few more things. A quick arrangement of news-like items laid out into an audio feng shui mode. Today, some moments of miraculous happenings. Next. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Let's roll into this here thing.
Just a few more things.
We take news-like items, we study them in detail, we think of their emotional impact, we think of their tone, we think of their representation of society as a whole. We painstakingly put them up on a whiteboard, then we arrange them and we number them. Sometimes a theme emerges. Today one did. It's a theme of miraculous happenings.
Thing one.
See, and I told you we numbered the things, right? Imagine you're in the woods. And you hear a young one crying. You heard about this story? Guy who's apparently not well in his head in Montana said a baby was too heavy. He had apparently hid the baby beneath a wood pile in cold weather. Baby was found wearing a wet and soiled clothes in cold weather, but found at 2:30 in the morning. Consider the series of miraculous events here. The crazy guy became, just for a second, self-aware enough to say, yeah, there's a baby in the woods, and the baby lived. The baby was not eaten or attacked. The baby was not harmed beyond repair. Baby's going to be fine physically. Yeah, sometimes there are miracles.
Thing two.
Next up, husband. Also involving wood. This is in a fire. Proposed again to his wife after something happens.
They return to sift through the rubble only to find a very precious piece of jewelry. Ishu and Laura came back to what's left of their homes 3 years ago in search of that, Laura's wedding ring. And there in the ashes, yes, she found it. Ishu quickly dropped to one knee, as you just saw, with the damaged Tiffany ring in hand, and asked his bride to marry him again.
Yeah, in the ashes of a house burned. Imagine how traumatic that is. You're sifting through that. The series of miracles at play here. You're sifting through the ashes and something shines and the sun catches your eye and there it is. There's the promise you made. There's the ring you wore. Now, secret was, I heard the wife burned the house down because she lost it in the drain. But that's just a rumor. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing three.
So, you've been on the subway in New York City, have you? All in all, it had gotten better. Now, under de Blasio, it's returning to nightmare status. Under Giuliani, it had cleaned up pretty well. In fact, it was a pretty good system. There's parts of it you don't want to ride. I've never seen anything like this. Oh, I've seen people jump the third rail. I have. I've seen them jump off the platform and cross over the trains. I know there's people who live deep in the tunnels in the New York subway because the tunnels go down some 40 stories. But this is about a guy who's riding on the outside of a New York City subway train.
As I see the doors closing, a man comes right up to the door and without hesitation starts holding on. And I'm noticing that he's going with the train. It's not like he's banging on the door, let me in, or putting a hand through like I've seen many people do before.
And he didn't get hurt. He didn't get hit because there are protrudences all along the rails in New York City as you go through those areas. There's areas where the train barely makes it through. He could have been scraped off. He wasn't. He made it. He lived. And it's so New York. Because in the video, there's just people, they're on their phones reading their papers. Hey, there's a guy on the train. Yeah, don't bug me. I don't care about the guy on the train. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing four.
It's a miracle. My sister no longer needs to have nightmares because Smucker is getting rid of the universally known to be evil Pillsbury Doughboy.
The ticklish ball of dough lets out a laugh anytime someone pokes him in the belly. At one point, according to the Pillsbury website, Poppin' Fresh was getting 200 fan letters a week.
My sister, who's far smarter and a better human being than me to boot, used to have visions of that thing, that Pillsbury Doughboy. Well, I think there was a movie. Was there a movie where he was an evil character, the Pillsbury Doughboy? My sister used to be afraid of him and the flying monkeys from The Wizard of Oz. Now, the monkeys, I get that. A flying monkey? Are you kidding me? That's terrifying, but a dope boy. Last up, just a few more things.
Thing five.
Jimmy Carter, apparently miraculously able to see things that Jesus would be all for. I don't know where he sourced this. I don't see any annotated footnotes, or I didn't hear him quote any Bible verses. Perhaps it's a miracle, or you know, something.
I have a hard time believing that the Jesus, for instance, would approve abortions unless it was because of rape or incest or if the mother's life was in danger.
Yeah. Would Jesus approve gay marriage?
I believe he would.
You know, the thing I would say about this is if only there was a book, you know, it's a tragedy of society that there's not a book that had categorized and cataloged and detailed what Christ thought of things. It's an oversight. If you think, what?
The Bible.
Oh, the Bible. That's right. All right. Todd Emmer Show continue on AM 770 KTTH. When we come back, the Amtrak hearings. Two words, WashDOT New.